This week in Your Parents' Basement, we're trying to save our girlfriends from a mad scientist, tentacles, and exploding hamsters with the help of the space police. From 1987 and 1990, we're playing Maniac Mansion for the PC and NES. I'm Steve Greenwell, and with me is the regular co-host who doesn't need the Hunk-O-Matic. It's Huell Hauser.
Steve, don't be a tuna head.
And our other co-host, he loves to cool down in his radioactive pool on a hot summer day, is Todd Brisket.
It's good to be here with a very select few of my stereotypical friends. And just like when I play Maniac Mansion, none of you are minorities.
Oh, jeez. And today, we have a special patient guest. He originally requested this game months ago, except we did Shadowrun instead. We're extending a warm welcome to a guy who loves eating plastic fruit. It's EJ.
I'm actually also here with Chuck the Plant, but he doesn't really serve any actual purpose. He just kind of sits there.
Perfect. I wouldn't have it any other way. You can reach us by email at parentsbasementpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe to it on iTunes and give us some stars. Also, please support the show by using our Amazon click-through link at www.ypbpodcast.com. We want to purchase replica WWE belts, brother. Today's game is Maniac Mansion. In the mid-1980s, Lucasfilms branched into gaming, and by the latter part of the decade, they struck gold in the adventure genre. Maniac Mansion was their second game with that feel, and paved the way for quirky fare like Zack McCracken and the Alien Mindbenders and The Secret of Monkey Island. Of course, Maniac Mansion was even more odd, bizarre, and funny than those latter games. You played as three teenagers attempting to rescue a friend from the clutches of a mad scientist and his family. For some reason, there were tentacles involved, as well as the space police. You guided the kids around via mouse pointer, and like most adventure games, it was hella hard to beat if you didn't have the help of Nintendo Power or a similar hint source. DJ, you nominated this game many months ago, apparently. So why don't you start the discussion off for us?
Yeah, so I chose this game for a whole bunch of different reasons. I thought it'd be good for discussion just because there's a lot of there's a lot of history behind it. There's some really crazy stories about, particularly when it was brought over to the NES. It was adapted into a TV show. It has a sequel and a really intense cult following, and it's also just it was a really groundbreaking game for. They kind of invented a whole new interface for video games with the sort of point-and-click method that they used that I don't think had really been used before that. So
it's a little more than point-and-click, though. A little more involved.
Yes.
Because you are not just clicking objects. You are clicking words to create sentences to do things in the game. Mm-hmm. Which I found horrifically annoying.
This, especially the NES interface, has not aged particularly well, especially since the NES did not have a mouse released for it. So that's one issue.
That's the bane of any game for me, is if it's a mouse-based game and you have to use a controller.
Oh, yeah, and in this game, it's tough to get around because unlike some of the other adventure games that we've mentioned in the past briefly, like Shadowgate and The Uninvited, you have to do things quickly in Maniac Mansion. Like, there are time constraints. The house will explode if you don't save the girl quickly enough. And also, just, you'll get caught and thrown in jail if you don't sneak into someone's room quickly enough.
And even getting out of jail is a timing issue.
Yeah, you can only get out of jail if you have the key, which you can't really get until much later into the game, or if you have two people in jail, one person can get out.
Yeah.
I believe that's how it works. I might be mistaken.
No, I managed to figure that out because the one person has to stand next to the brick, mm-hmm. push the brick, which opens the door. But when after you push the brick, you have to then select the menu that lets you select the other kid, and then you select that other kid, and then click the doorway. And somehow I pulled it off using the NES controller. But it was very stressful.
You did much better than a, you know, 10-year-old Steve Greenwell then. Because I could never get, like, the kids out once they got into the jail.
I'm very proud.
Yeah. DJ, did
but you... there's no way you figured that out on your own, though.
Absolutely.
No, of course not.
No, I didn't.
Did you really, Hugo?
Yeah, because I saw... I moused over the loose brick, and I did everything possible with it. I read it. I turned it on and off.
Well, I think the main thing is that even knowing that the brick is selectable is a mystery to most people.
Mm. Well, I just passed by it randomly and saw it pop up, like as I was mousing around, because the mouse is so slow that as it was moving across the wall, it highlighted loose brick, and then I found that. But then I didn't know what to do with one kid in there, but then once a second one was thrown in, I realized there was a noise of like something opening, so I had the other one stand by the door out. So, yeah, Todd, I figured it out.
Well, that's a very efficient way to make a dungeon, is to have a door button on the inside.
A secret, it's like one of those bookcases where you pull out a secret book.
Now, just maybe to balance this out then, how long did it take you to get a kid in jail? Like 10 seconds?
Oh, it was very fast. It was almost immediately. I went into the kitchen and there was Dr. Fred and he threw me in jail.
And then actually, one of the methods to just get into the mansion if you don't know where to look for the key that some people I knew used was just you keep ringing the doorbell long enough that they get ticked off and throw you in the mansion.
Really?
And throw you in the dungeon, and then you do it again, awesome. And then you break someone out.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I went to the old manual, and there is a small part in the beginning where they pretty much tell you that there's a key under the mat. Okay. So that was a help.
Well, where else would alien kind of things keep their key?
Just alien like doctors.
Yeah. Yes. Aliens are people, too.
Not really.
Although I can't even remember. Do they make it clear? Are they aliens or are they just old?
They're under the mind control of the alien meteor.
Okay. Is that why they are different colors or is it like a Nickelodeon Doug thing?
It looked a lot. Whatever species Skeeter is, I think.
Yeah,
it's the
a Doug thing. Yeah. In the PC version, they're regular human color, they're not blue.
You mean the politically correct version or
the
personal
one I played,
computer
at least.
Version?
The one, the MS-DOS version I played.
Ah.
Yes, the computer version is actually much less PC than the NES version, ironically.
Everyone's just white.
I hear what you did there. Mind blown.
So what is the basic story here? Because I don't think I got far enough.
Yeah, there's not much... I
didn't get far
to
enough
out
to,
as far as story goes.
Yeah, to figure it out. So you go ahead.
Well, most of the story is in the is kind of in the manual, but basically the idea is, and there's not much to it. It's basically just this meteor crashed like 10 or so years before the story begins. I forget the exact time frames in there somewhere in like the manual, I think, or the like opening cutscene. But basically, the story is just. Dave's girlfriend, Wendy, was kidnapped by the Edisons under the meteor's control, and the meteor is trying to use some crazy machine to suck out her brain for reasons that are never really fully explained.
Yeah,
I definitely got to the brain-sucking part to like power a machine or something. I don't know. Something like that.
They're not entirely clear on that.
No. I would say no.
Very ambiguous, and I think it's all on purpose because they're trying to spoof every B science fiction horror movie from the 40s and 50s, where there is no plot. It's just a guy. He wants a brain.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, geez, this game is also one of the older adventure games, so, of course, there's about 50 million ways to die or get thrown in jail. The game is unbeatable if you have certain character combinations and do stupid things with your items. And also, I think, I'm not sure if it's in the NES version, but in the PC version at least, you can die.
You can die a couple ways in the NES version, and there's actually two different versions of the NES version because what? Some cartridges went out where you could microwave the hamster, and then if you showed the microwave hamster to Weird Ed, he would kill you because you killed his hamster.
That is amazing.
You know, didn't particularly appreciate that. And actually, it's funny. I just found this out a few months ago. I was reading an article where they interviewed some of the old people who worked for the Nintendo hotline, you know, the, like, helpline you could call. Oh, and apparently one of the people who worked there discovered this and told someone at Nintendo and was like, we're supposed to be a family-friendly company, and I thought you guys might want to know about, you know, the ability to blow up a hamster in a microwave, and then which leads to homicide.
Straight up murder.
Is that the only thing that was taken out of later versions?
Yeah, most of the other stuff, yeah, I think that's the only thing that was taken out of, like, of the later versions. Most of the other stuff they caught beforehand. There's, like, a whole long-form journalism piece someone wrote years and years ago, actually, called The Expurgation of Maniac Mansion, and it was by one of the people who worked on the NES version about all the stuff that Nintendo made them take out, some of which was completely benign and nonsensical, and some of which was, you know, not awful, but not kid-friendly. Some more cursing, some more sexually suggestive stuff, things of that nature.
Hmm.
Yeah, Teebs, I think you played the PC version, right?
Yeah.
How'd you do? How far did you get?
I've never gotten that far into this game. I've attempted it a few times, but I don't like the games where they become unwinnable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that's the problem with this game. There's no way for me to just go in randomly and try and explore and solve it. But mm-hmm. I guess that's part of the appeal, is that they want you to replay it, and that's why they have multiple characters, is to keep replaying it.
Yeah. Well, that's another neat thing. There's multiple characters, and there's also four or five different endings. So there's a few different ways to beat the game, although they fairly closely resemble each other.
Is there, like, a quote-unquote good or bad ending?
So, basically...
Besides dying?
There's, like, three main endings, and then there's, like, variations on them, depending on if anyone has died or not. And particularly if Dave dies, like, you see his mourning girlfriend at the end. And then there's a version where it's kind of like a happy ending for everybody, where you can actually get the meteor a contract, and he becomes a published novelist and abandons evil, basically.
The meteor?
Yes.
Oh, of course.
Hmm. Yeah, the meteor is sent.
Meteor is the bad guy in this thing.
Yeah, so, like, one of the weird in-game subplots, I guess.
I thought Dr. Fred was the bad guy.
No. This is like Castlevania, Symphony of the Night.
Mm, almost exactly. Well, I asked you guys the plot, and you said there was no plot, but this seems like a gigantic plot twist.
As the game goes on, there's sort of, like, subplots you can find out by investigating and talking to the characters. So, like, some of the different endings you can get is, like, you can get the green tentacle on your side with some characters because you find out that he, like, wants to become a professional musician. So you can, like, record a demo with Razor and play it for him, and then they become, like, friends, and he helps you fight the Edisons.
Mm. Yeah. And I think the other main ending is If you are the nerdy kid, you can fix the radio, and that allows you to call the Intergalactic Space Police or something. In which case, you can, they will then come and get rid of the meteor for you.
Yeah, they come arrest him.
Yeah, so you can call the meteor police. That's another ending. And then you can actually find some, like, if you get all of the keys to get into where the meteor is, you can, like, put on some radioactive proof gear, pick up the meteor, put it in the weird Edsel, and launch it into space.
Yep.
With the meteor in it.
The weird Edsel is a car in the game.
Is it Weird Ed's Weird Edsel? Yep.
Yeah. Mm. See, it's clever.
Wow. Ah.
I'm looking at the Maniac Mansion fan. 50webs.com, which sounds like a website that was created about 20 years ago, but they have a helpful ways to lose page, and it's about 6 pages long, and it is full of fun stuff. Make a tape of Sid Eraser playing the piano and send it to Mark Eater. When you receive the contract, show it to Green Tentacle. He'll be so jealous that he'll kill you.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. Use the water valve.
Stuff I would never think of.
Use the water valve to drain the pool. Have another kid go down the pool, then switch back to the first kid and refill it. The kid in the pool. The kid in the pool will drown.
That's like the Sims level death.
Wow. Here, yeah, some of these are quite obscure. Fill the glass jar with the radioactive water from the pool. Put the jar into the microwave and turn it on. When it's done, open the microwave door and the radioactive steam will make you spin around and kill you.
What?
Note that only the kid opening the microwave will die, even if there are others standing next to him.
Oh. That's a plus.
Mm. Yeah.
You gotta waft. You can't just inhale.
Mm. Yeah. I learned that in chemistry.
Mm. Yeah. And then there's just
this is just insane.
Yeah. Then there's just a whole big list of like things that make the game unwinnable. Like if you catch Ed's package before him, but you give it to him without collecting the unused stamps, the game becomes unwinnable with Razor, Sid, and Wendy. If you open the undeveloped film when the lights are on, the film will be exposed, making the game unwinnable with Michael.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yep. So it's just, oh jeez, there's just so many weird things. I never really got that far in this game as a kid. I basically got as far as the hints in Nintendo Power would take me. I could do certain things. Like, I think you have to use the wax fruit on one of the tentacles to get past it. Cause he likes to eat that. You have to use the hunk-o-matic to rip the bushes out by the front porch at one point.
What's behind there?
I think that gets you access to the cellar, where there's something you need there, which you then need to open one of the doors.
Yeah, the cellar lets you drain the pool, and then you can get in the pool, yes. And there's a key at the bottom of it you need.
Mm.
Yes. Because where else would the key be?
Yeah. Or it would also be impossible to dive below the water to retrieve it.
So, well, yeah, don't be crazy.
Huh.
Well, in their defense, it is radioactive water. So they did...
Oh, well, you didn't they say did, that.
They did at least hand wave that in the game. Yeah, no, the pool's radioactive, and it's just a bunch of weird stuff in this game, man.
Now, we did mention... I'm sorry.
No, it's funny. I couldn't, as a kid, appreciate... Because I first played this when I was probably like 9, 10 years old, just like how nonsensical a lot of this stuff was, because I borrowed it from a friend who lived down the street, and if I ever got stuck, I would just ask him, like, oh, what do I do here? And he would just tell me. So it's one of those things where I didn't realize until, you know, having this conversation, like, oh, yeah. A lot of this is not very logical in any way.
No. It's a lot of clicking. A lot of trial and error.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain parts of it, like, if you have to get into someone's room, I think that the Dr. Ed is the best example, or whatever his name is. You can ring the doorbell, and then he'll go toward the doorbell. And if you position one of the kids near the room, you can then go sneak into the room and get some of the items you need. Except you have to be careful where you position the kid, because you can't, like, the game is actually aware of, like, where your characters are. So if your kid is in the path of where the doctor will go, then he will go, "Hey, what are you doing in my house?" and forget all about the doorbell, obviously. So, like, it's full of, like little things like that that really trip me up as, like, a 10-year-old kid playing this. But, you know, it was fun at the time. There wasn't much else to play.
Yeah, it is pretty, I don't want to say complex, but, like, it's very detailed that way. Mm-hmm. That they actually care about things like that.
Yeah, it's definitely,
especially this era, like this, this early in video games.
Mm-hmm. I think it's probably definitely because it has a legacy as a PC game first.
Master Race.
Like, there's no, I don't think there's any way that it's, like, this detailed if it's, you know, just a generic kind of Nintendo game.
Yeah, not at all.
I mean, I can't even, were there any point-and-click adventures like this that only came out for the NES?
Well, this is Home Alone was pretty much just like this.
Mm-hmm. good point.
I mean, you're in a house, and you're defeating people using objects around you.
Mm.
So this was almost exactly the same.
Good point. So, well, DJ, did you beat this game as a kid then with your friend's help?
Yeah, I could only ever get the ending where you get the you launch the meteor in the space. I tried to get the other ones and would, like, mess up and get frustrated and stop playing. And I think I actually, in
preparation
for
this, unbelievable.
I actually, like, went and found the like videos of the other endings just out of curiosity. But yeah, I think a lot of my affection for this game is has a lot to do with just I really love the weird humor and just how kind of idiosyncratic, like there's, I can't think of a better word for it. I had never played anything like it, like mm-hmm. at the time, you know, when I discovered it. And it's just one of those things that really stuck with me because it was just like, you know, there was nothing else like it. It was not, you know, Mario or Sonic the Hedgehog. This was its whole own thing.
Oh yeah, this is definitely a unique game. Like even compared to the other kind of point and click adventure games, it's stuff like Shadowgate and The Uninvited and Deja Vu, which are kind of like either detective stories or horror stories.
Right. This game is probably in like the Earthbound category where it's just mm-hmm. a kid like me. I'm the stereotypical punk rocker, and that's me walking around there.
Were you Axel or Rose or Sandy? Is that her name? Axel and Sandy.
Razor.
Razor,
lead singer for the punk band Razor and the Scumettes.
Axel or Rose?
Well, I knew it was something kind of like that. I mean, like the photographer guy's name is like Mike F-Stop. So,
yeah, and the surfer guy is named Jeff Woody.
Oh yeah.
The other rocker is named Sid, so that wasn't really close either.
Well, he's not a rocker. He's an aspiring musician trying to start his own new wave band.
Oh, he's a new wave guy. My bad. I just knew he could also use the instruments.
Yeah. It's weird that he's named after Sid Vicious then probably, but no, this was I will say, as a kid, like my parents had this game first. Like they got it when I was real young, and it scared me as a kid. Like I didn't like it. Like I did mature from a sweet baby boy to a semi-sweet baby boy before I could play it. So.
But yeah, that was another thing.
The sign on the door when you first start says something like, all trespassers will be mutilated or something like that.
Yeah, that was another thing that I very distinctly remember about playing this game was, like, as much as I loved it, even though the humor is very, like, goofy, I would, like, be very on edge playing it because there is this element of, like, you know, one of the Edisons can nab you at any time because some of the stuff, like, if you go into their room, but they also just kind of wander around randomly at times.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's where I first ran into them. He was just standing in the kitchen.
This is a game that has a living world. You're living in the world. You're not
it's a living, breathing
in
mansion.
The world.
Mm-hmm. Time passes. It's like a regular World of Warcraft or something.
Mm.
Yeah, I think this is also the first game to ever use cutscenes too.
You know, I read that. I read that, but I think this is the game for sure that where what's his face Gilbert coined the term cutscene, but. The first cutscene in a video game was in Pac-Man.
Really?
Yeah. You know, the interstitials between stages.
Yeah.
Ah.
Well,
it's funny because the manual actually has to explain to you what a cutscene is. Like, just so you know what's going on.
Well, I think the distinction might be, this could be the first game that has cutscenes that interrupt what you're doing.
True.
Yeah, because that is true, yeah.
Because, like, I think Ninja Gaiden came out before this. Ninja Gaiden has, like, a ton of cutscenes on it.
Yeah, so
You're correct there, yeah. This is where the scenes go on a timer, and it doesn't matter what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah. The manual says, cutscenes are short animated sequences like scenes from a movie, which can provide clues and information about the characters. When you are viewing a cutscene, you do not direct the action, so the text below the animation window disappears.
Oh, that's very helpful.
So they had to let people know the game's not broken. You're just watching a cutscene.
So if you today, that's what video game life was like. This is the cutting edge back in the 80s or whatever it was.
87.
But now it's the equivalent of the virtual reality we have going on today. It's the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was watching these cutscenes, I felt like I was in the mansion.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I had a PlayStation 4.5 and I had the goggles on. I was in the Oculus Rift. Mm-hmm. Well, touching on the kind of history and the where is and now aspect of this, Maniac Mansion, it was a cult classic, and a sequel, Day of the Tentacle, came out in 1993. The easiest way to describe this game is to read the helpful synopsis on Wikipedia. 5 years after the events of Maniac Mansion, Purple Tentacle, a mutant monster and lab assistant created by mad scientist Dr. Fred Edison, drinks toxic sludge from a river behind Dr. Fred's laboratory. The sludge causes him to grow a pair of flipper-like arms, develop vastly increased intelligence, and a thirst for global domination. To the delight of the internets, on March 22nd, a remaster for Day of the Tentacle was released on the PC, PS4, and Vita. Okay, nobody cared that it came out on the Vita. But still, it's much easier to hunt down and play now. And by the way, there's a huge Easter egg in Day of the Tentacle. On a computer in that game, you can play all of the original Maniac Mansion. Good times, or at least that's what the internet said. I've never played Day of the Tentacle. DJ, did you ever check that one out?
Yeah, I like it. It's fun. It's, you know, very similar tone. The big difference is there's only three characters, so you have no choice, and the only one who returns is Bernard. So. It loses some of the things that I really liked about it, which is the original, which is that, you know, you had the ability to play as all these different characters. There were different endings, and it was much more open-ended, whereas the second one is very linear, and you can only play as one character at a time, I think. Or no, wait, they're in different time periods.
Yeah, I think there's only one ending in that one.
Yeah, and there's one ending. It's still a lot of fun. And actually, it was really hard to track down, and I was actually a friend who was living a few states away at the time sent it to me in the mail, and then I had to download some program to basically emulate an older operating system just so I could play it. So I'm glad it's easier to play now than it was when I played it like 5 years ago.
Oh, did you have to whip out the old DOS box?
Yes, that was it, DOS box.
Oh, yeah.
Now with the enhanced edition re-release, they added all the cheeves in. Get those cheeves.
Oh, did they now?
Yeah. Ooh, can't wait to pop them cheeves.
Real quick, before we go into the future further. Did you guys see that there was a Japanese version of this game? And they redid the art and everything? I'll just send you guys a link. You do with it what you will. But they basically restyled the game in kind of like an anime cartoony style.
Is this going to be a mind terror?
And it looks like it is probably the worst version of this game ever created.
Oh, wait. Why'd they port this game?
Sending a video.
Why'd they port this game to Japan? I didn't know it was by that Spanish company we know and love.
Yeah. Aleco.
Oh, I thought it was Haleco.
Haleco.
You are the pronunciation master on this.
Yeah, I mean, no, I did go to pronunciation school.
Oh, this looks...
Wow.
Japanese version looks like... It kind of looks like the same game, but it looks like the same game, but if they made it 5 years before.
Right.
Yeah, this looks like if it was, developed directly for the NES.
Yeah, this is what a game made for the NES would look like. Instead of being a port of a PC game.
Well, they got Bernard. They got Bernard right. I'll tell you that much.
Wow!
No, I've never seen this before.
Who is this girl in just properly in slacks? Oh my goodness! I'll have to link to this because this is wow. It's like, why bother?
Yeah.
Speaking of kind of like why bother, there was also a Maniac Mansion TV show in the early 1990s for Canadian TV and the Family Channel. PC Gamer magazine said the show, quote, has roughly as much to do with the original game as a chipmunk's arsehole resembles Sweden. However, it did okay. Arsehole. There's an R in there intentionally. It did receive okay to good reviews at the time it was on the air, though. It was mostly, most of the cast members were from SCTV.
Yeah, it stars Joe Flaherty as Dr. Edison.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I don't know, it's too bad. I feel like a TV version based on the game, or at least just based on the weirdo alien family, that could be pretty good. Like, it's quirky. Could be funny.
Yeah, could be quirky. Could be quirky.
Well, we got Third Rock from the Sun. I guess that'll have to do.
Oh, yeah. I watched a clip of the TV show, and I'll just say, don't watch it, because it's not that good. I saw that it got good reviews back in the day. I was like, hey, maybe it'll be a laugh a minute. Maybe this is the show I've been missing all my life ever since the last season of Arrested Development ended. You know, I'd been waiting for a comedy to come replace it. Maybe this is it. But it's not, sadly.
You've been waiting for that show to just tickle your bone, and it didn't.
Nope.
Yeah, I had a similar thing happen when I finally tracked a clip down, because I was like, oh, Joe Flaherty, SCTV, Freaks and Geeks, Eugene Levy, A Mighty Wind's one of my favorite movies of all time. This should be great. And then it was not.
Hey, man, Joe Flaherty was just trying to get that mailbox money. He saw how Bob Saget was living. He was like, hey, let me just get in this nice sitcom game with this nice family. And nope. Wasn't having it. DJ, did you have anything else you wanted to say about the old Maniac Mansion here?
I think I pretty much touched on it. I definitely think it's not for everyone. It's definitely got its limitations, but you know, if nothing else, I think it's worth checking out just because it's just got such a weird, unique, fun voice that, you know, there are definitely some things like, I think Earthbound is another game that's fair to kind of lump in with it, at least in the sense of humor. It's just very much its own unique thing that's worth, you know, spending at least 5-10 minutes checking out, even if you're not into the whole adventure game thing.
Yeah. I will say it's not really cheap, but it's not super expensive either. According to price charting, you can get the cart for about $19. The box and manual cost about $82 though. And if you want like a really good condition, a new copy, $222. Like all these NES games, if you want like a sealed copy, they go for a ridiculous sum of money now. I don't even know how people still have sealed copies, but you know, to each their own.
Well, there are many PC versions floating around for free too. Like legally, I believe, at least at one point, legally for free. I don't know what the copyright status of this is anymore. And the PC version is also much more user friendly and uncensored. And there's actually people who've updated the graphics as well.
The PC version is streamable on archive.org, so it's at that abandonware status where you can just play it.
Oh, nice.
There may be newer versions. I know a few years ago someone did Maniac Mansion Deluxe, which was the same game but just with way, way better graphics. And someone was someone's been working on a 3D rebuild of it for like years, self-financing. It's like the Duke Nukem Forever type situation, I feel like, where every couple years I hear about it and then nothing happens. But maybe one day it'll happen.
I mean, this is technically a LucasArts game, so I suppose, you know, technically Disney owns it all. But it's okay. Disney isn't litigious.
Well, I read something that Ron Gilbert said that he was asked, why don't you make a remastered version, an enhanced and remastered version of Maniac Mansion? And his response was something like, I saw what George Lucas did to Star Wars. I'm not going to do that.
I thought he only sold Lucasfilm. Did he also sell LucasArts?
Yeah, it's under the umbrella, I think.
Yeah,
I'm not sure specifically.
Well, okay. And also the bigger issue is also that LucasArts is dead. They closed the company.
They're still a publisher, is what I just read. They still publish things.
They're still a license holder, I think. So they can still, you know, if you're an up and coming game company with some good titles under your belt, you could be like, hey, let me make a Maniac Mansion game, please, pretty please, and they'll let you. Although they will probably charge you a ridiculous sum of money, because that was some issue with someone wanted to do an XCOM 2 modification, and I think that was with Microsoft. Sorry, Microsoft told them someone wanted to do a Shadowrun mod for XCOM 2, and Microsoft told them, yeah, that'll be $500,000 just for the license. So
that's how licensing works.
That's fairly steep for an obscure game like Shadowrun. Sorry, DJ, I don't mean to bring up bad memories again. to go back to the Shadowrun well. But yeah, LucasArts was acquired by the Walt Disney Company through the acquisition of its parent company, Lucasfilm, in 2012. On April 3rd, 2013, Disney halted all internal development at LucasArts and laid off most of its staff. However, LucasArts remained open so that it could retain its function as a licensor. So they probably technically own this Maniac Mansion license, but like a lot of things on the internet, like most companies don't pursue, like shutting down things like archive.org and, you know, just because it makes them seem like dicks. Nintendo does it still, and that's about it. Well, Huel, what about your final thoughts here on the old mansion?
We've mentioned the tentacles a lot, and I think it's important to note to the listener that these are not attached to anything. These are literally just tentacles.
Disembodied tentacles.
Yeah, they just walk around and you can talk to them. Mm-hmm. So it's not like there's a creature of some kind that has a lot of tentacles, or there's tentacles like in the house. They're just walking around. Mm-hmm. And that was very jarring.
They're stubs. They're jumping around on their nubs. They're tentacle nubs.
Yes. They're just nubs of tentacles.
They're fairly menacing looking too, I feel like.
They're just unsettling.
Yeah.
Yes, well, especially in Day of the Tentacle.
It could stab you.
In Day of the Tentacle, where his tentacle grows little limbs, and he gets an even angrier face that's very menacing.
I'm not a fan.
Nightmare fuel. Brisket, did you play the old Day of the Tentacle?
I played it a little bit back in the day, and I never owned it myself. I played it at a friend's house.
Sounds like fun times.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming that's a one-player game like this one is.
You're correct. Are you asking how did we play it at a friend's house?
I can see that.
He's like, hey, man, I got this cool game. Go click around in it for a while. I'm going to go, brush my teeth or something. I don't know. I've played it for a while.
I feel like you could co-op this. You can be like, oh, go over here. What's that? Like, someone else could point out something or give you suggestions to try stuff. I could see that.
Oh, I don't know. That sounds nefarious.
Use your imagination, Steve. So close-minded.
Oh, I did have one thing I wanted to ask. I was curious what you thought of the soundtrack, because that was another thing that I always really loved about this game, is the music is just so good.
I have a specific note that Bernard's music is the best of the children. Yes, I did enjoy it.
I remember liking the music, but I didn't. I didn't do a deep dive on the music in my replaying for tonight's show. So
I want to point out each kid when you switch to them has their own like theme music because they have a CD player that they are listening to.
Yeah,
or at least it's a CD player on the NES version because it's 1990. I don't know. Did that make it into the PC one?
I don't remember a CD player.
Yeah, it's like one of the items that everyone starts with on the NES one.
Maybe it's a Walkman.
Or maybe they just don't feel like they need an in-world explanation for having music in a video game.
Well, you can turn it off, the CD player, so there is no music, but that just makes things even creepier.
Yeah, that's just weird.
Yeah, definitely.
There's that.
Well, on that note, I think we're about ready to go on to the email portion of tonight's show. Todd, did you receive any emails this week?
Unfortunately, container was not populated.
Oh.
And I did not get any.
Wah, 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 wah.
It's a fairly straightforward way of saying that.
Mm-hmm. Well, then. Huel, did you receive any emails?
Well, when we started, I would have said no, but actually a few minutes ago, I just received an email while we were doing the show.
Oh, that's good.
So, it is from ScooterButt42.
Oh, Scooty.
Yeah. So, I'm happy to receive this. And they write, "Dear YPB, I love Maniac Mansion. It's so fun exploring that crazy house. Huel is so right that the game was really annoying on the NES. DJ is a great guest. I'm glad he suggested this game. By the way, what's your favorite Tetris piece? Sincerely, ScooterButt42.
Very, very prescient.
Yeah, it's odd that they would know what we were talking about during the show. Huh. Well,
they're definitely not outside your window.
No, I don't think they would be anywhere near and able to hear me, but yeah. Anyway.
I mean, maybe see you, because that is a tantalizing aspect that no one could resist.
I am gesticulating wildly while we talk, so maybe they just could. If one was to see me, they might be able to tell what game we were talking about.
Yeah, you're like, "Bottity boop, I like
zip
video.
Ba ba ba." The Maniac Mansion.
Wow, you sound like Mario right there.
Maybe it was your extremely accurate tentacle impression that.
Oh yeah.
Away.
I was demonstrating that.
My favorite Tetris piece is the four bar, the long.
Well, they all have four. Steven.
No, he likes that long one. He likes to go deep with that one.
He likes to slide it in that narrow space.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, you Tetris box must like popsicles. Here comes the Tetris. Goes right down.
Todd?
I'm going to be controversial here and say I like the T block. That's my jam.
Boo.
That is my jam.
I was gonna say that.
My thing. You can do anything with that T. You can do anything.
Yeah. Because it's not a piece. It's not a piece that when you get it, you're like, oh man, where's this going to go? Like you can find a spot for it no matter what.
Yeah. You can do the last second flip and slide it in somewhere else underneath.
Rotate it. If you do the swirl, you know, and then slide it right in there. DJ,
The T is great because it's all about setting up the next piece.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with the underappreciated L-shaped piece.
But which one? The one that's literally an L.
Yes, the one that's literally an L, not the other one.
The other one sucks.
It's a good choice. I like that one more than the backwards L.
So we can all agree that the S, both S shapes are the worst.
Oh yeah, I hate the S. Okay. The S can go, go eat it.
S can go S itself.
Yeah, go S yourself. You Tetris block.
Because that was my thought on the T. It's like I said, whenever you get it, you're never angry or disappointed. But it seems like every time the S shows up, I'm furious. Like, where is this going to go?
She's disappointed.
Is this going to create a hole somewhere or hang off a ledge and block something? It's completely useless.
Oh, like you're going to leave a gap. You got the S, you're leaving a gap.
Yeah. There's gap. Unless it's the exact shape, like, hole or, like stair pattern that it can fit in. But that's it.
Oh, my. Oh my!
Well, now we don't need to have an episode on Tetris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to squash that bug while it was out. You know.
Well, guys, there's a very interesting backstory about Tetris that we will not get into now.
Yeah, let's save it.
DJ, did you get any emails?
Yeah, I got an email from This is from Tuna Diver at AltaVista.net.
Oh. Alta Vista. I didn't even know Alta Vista was still around.
Me either until right now. They say, one of my favorite things about a lot of podcasts is their theme song. If you guys could have anyone write a theme song for you, who would you choose and why?
Oh, that's a good ask.
Pretty good. Yeah, pretty good ask.
Anyone. Two immediately spring to mind. That would be either Weird Al or John Williams.
Oh. Yeah. John Williams, that would be a solid choice, but the intro would be like 5 minutes long before you really get to the meat.
That's fine.
I'm going to go with Mark Mothersbaugh.
Ooh, very good.
He can pin a jingle.
And it would be very techno sounding and 16-bit sounding.
Yeah.
Oh. My initial thought was Ben Folds, but I don't know why.
That would fit. Yeah.
He can tap those ivories.
Yeah, I feel
like he's... A little tickle.
I feel like he's too classy for us. He's better than us with his
glasses. Well, he's the latest indie darling on the scene, so... we don't really cover those.
Is he really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know we took the time machine back to 1997, Huel.
Well, he's the rare two-time indie darling, decades apart.
He's now gone back into it.
Well, but once I thought more about it, I thought we should have the favorite artist of former guest Beanie, Taylor Swift. She should do the jingle for our show.
Yeah, we can get the young crowd if she's doing our theme.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean there's one demo we are already very strong in, and it's tween and teenage girls. We just can't read their emails on the show because, you know, they don't ask questions. They just say, "Oh, Huel, you're so handsome. Oh, mm-hmm. Brisket, divorce your wife, marry me." But that would be inappropriate to read on the show. But, you know.
Well, we do need to reach out to the white males in their 30s market.
Yeah.
So I think we need to find someone.
We're sorely
lacking. Yeah, we're really, it's really low. When I look at the numbers,
we have the urban market covered as well too.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Immigrants, I mean, they love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a surprise hit in Mongolia.
I did see that on the WordPress statistics.
Yeah, the site stats, big in Mongolia.
Big in Mongolia.
It's just what it says when you log in.
Yeah, there hasn't been a bigger touring act in Mongolia since Genghis Khan.
Huh. Wow.
Okay.
Whatever you say, Jay Leno.
that was very shtick. Very. DJ, who would you pick for a theme song?
So two of my favorite podcast theme songs were both written by Reggie Watts, who is now band leader on one of the late night shows. I can't remember which one, but he did the Comedy Bang Bang and You Made It Weird theme songs, which are both absurdly catchy. Another thought I had is there's a really awesome Canadian rapper named Cadence Weapon, who, in addition to being a former Canadian poet laureate, also has worked in references to Mega Man and other video games in his songs. So he might be a good fit.
Nice.
Yeah, I like it when rappers and other people slip in references, like nerdy references.
Yeah, MF Doom. He did a. A bunch of stuff on Space Ghost Coast to Coast and Adult Swim.
Yeah.
I only received one email this week. Hi guys, baseball season is just around the corner, so that made me wonder, Have you ever played and liked any video games based on TV game shows? Sincerely, Janet Sheen, mother of Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez.
At least
that has to be a coincidence, right?
Wow,
that has to be a coincidence.
An ask, that's not, that's an not ask the has Janet been Sheen,
is it?
Huh?
Yeah, it was weird because before we started recording, like we were like, oh, I wonder if Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez have the same mother.
A lot of our pre-show chatter does usually involve either Emilio Estevez or Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, and their relations.
So this wasn't uncommon.
Yeah, listen, ducks fly together. But have you,
the weird thing is that Charlie Sheen's real name is Carlos Estevez, but he's not related to Emilio Estevez. What's the deal with that?
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that information is correct.
We'll have to ask Janet.
I don't know. I hope this is the actual Janet Sheen. Well, no, it has to be because she did write. She's the mother of Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez.
It has to be a coincidence.
She was pretty clear, though.
There has to be more than one lady named Janet Sheen that has children named Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez. There has to be more than one in the world. I just can't believe it.
With different last names, yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, she probably heard about the first one who did it and thought, well, they turned into stable Hollywood actors.
Yeah.
So I better double up. But no, have you ever played and liked any video games based on TV game shows?
I had an old, or I guess it wasn't old at the time, but when we had an Apple II, there was a great version of Wheel of Fortune on the old floppy disk.
That was going to be my suggestion as well.
You played that.
Not that version, but Wheel of Fortune on the NES. I enjoyed that.
I put many spins into that one.
Yeah, I feel like that does a really easy and fun translation to video games.
Mm-hmm. The only problem I would have is like that end puzzle, or if there was like 30 letters in a puzzle, I think they only gave you like 20 seconds to solve it.
Ooh, to type it in.
Yeah, and that was, as we mentioned, like it's tough to play these games when you don't have a mouse or a keyboard. So
that would be impossible.
Yeah, it's not fun. And I also, my parents have the NES version of Monopoly,
did not care for that port.
Well, the big issue with it is that
also not a game show. I would like to point out.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's a board game. Well, listen, I've already started talking about it. I'm not going
to
pull back.
Oh, I wasn't stopping you. I just wanted to let you know.
Well, it was a game show for like a hot minute, and it was bad. But did you ever see that, Huel? There was like a 1990s Monopoly game show on TV. It was a little weird.
Did you have to push around like a dog or a shoe?
No, it was like, it was weird. Like you kind of just had to answer questions, and you got money for it.
Just like Monopoly.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to Google it right now, but the only thing that's coming up is Monopoly Millionaires Club, which is from 2015 and apparently is a thing. Like, so they've done this multiple times.
Hmm.
Hosted by stand-up comedian actor Billy Gardell from Mike and Molly.
We all know him. Yep.
Yeah. So, anyways. But no, the Monopoly NES port, it did not allow for much rules customization. So you actually had to do the stupid by-the-book rule of auctioning off property.
Oh, that is the worst.
nobody actually plays that way.
Yeah, because I have an iOS one that I play on occasion, and that is one of the defaults that you always have to go in and switch off, because it sucks.
Yeah, it's like, who are you kidding, Monopoly? Like, nobody wants the auctioning.
No one wants to make the game longer.
Isn't it bad enough? Doesn't make it go faster because you have to get the property sold?
No, it's like whenever someone buys a property, everyone else gets a chance to bid on it or something like that, right?
I think that's only if, like, whoever lands there gets first dibs, but if they don't buy it, then it goes to auction.
Oh, that's right.
It's correct, except what would happen with games with my sister and I was that we would get into, like, bidding wars for, like, 5 minutes over, like, these properties. And
just raising by dollar increments.
That's right. If you pass on buying it, then it goes to auction. That still makes it go longer.
Yeah, it was also, I don't know, it's weird. And it wouldn't let you customize other things like putting money on free parking and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Although you could go into the, like, our house rule was you got $200 for free parking, so you could go in and edit your money and give yourself an extra $200, which that was also a popular thing.
Just sounds like cheating.
Yeah, when someone would leave the room, sometimes I may have ended up with an extra property. I don't know. It was a long time ago. I can't remember. So, Brisket, was there any game shows you actually liked?
You guys hit the big ones, but one that I didn't play, but I heard a lot of buzz about at the time. And we talked about Bob Saget earlier in the show at some point. The 1 vs. 100 massively multiplayer game show game on Xbox.
Was that a TV show?
Yeah.
I thought it was only the game.
1 vs. 100 was a game show on TV.
Okay.
Yeah.
I believe you.
Oh, and the
host Bob Saget.
You know what? That does seem like it could be a decent video game.
Yeah, it had rave reviews at the time. I think they ended it because of the cost to produce it, because they actually had to have live hosts to control the questions and the crowds and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was like an event game. Like, it would be like the game's going to start at this time, and we need 100 people to participate. Yeah. But, so I think that's what made it so good, is like you actually had
everyone there. They call it a massively multiplayer online Xbox Live game show.
Exactly.
Yeah, the game was downloaded over 2.5 million times. And its success has led Microsoft to extend the beta season for 2 additional weeks. They said that at one point there was over 114,000 simultaneous players.
Crazy.
So, yeah, it was pretty good times. DJ, how about you? Any game show video games you liked?
Going off the last one that was said, I cannot remember the name of it, but MTV had like something similar they did. It was an interactive music show where you could play along with the contestants. It was like music trivia that was hosted by one of Frank Zappa's offspring. I cannot remember which of his children.
Dweezels?
I think it was either Ahmed. Dweezel or Ahmet. I want to say Dweezel.
Ahmed.
Ahmed Hussein Zappa.
that was pretty fun, at least to me at the time. Maybe it's just because it was the novelty of the internet being looped into it. But
what year was this?
I want to say it was early 2000s.
Oh yeah, that's cutting edge.
So it's definitely not remote control.
No.
I don't think so.
420 minutes, the game.
Or Total Request Live.
Amp. I remember I used to tape MTV's Amp off of the late night feed. It was the techno hour. Ooh. It was good stuff, man. You can see Prodigy.
Steve's Techno Dungeon.
DJ, I'm looking... I should share this link with you because maybe you'll see it and it'll jog your memory. I'm looking at the list of MTV game shows. Idiot Savants, maybe? It's definitely not Next or Silent Library. So.
Oh, it was Web Riot. They don't list it as a game show for some reason, but yeah, Web Riot, that was it.
Yeah. Ahmet Zappa and Masasa.
Oh, Masasa, yeah. I don't know.
Mufasa?
It's from The Lion King, right?
Yeah.
Masasa Mojo.
It's James Earl. James Earl Jones was there.
She is a Canadian actress.
Damn Canadians.
I know. Masasa. It took her job. Took her job.
Can't get away from them.
Yep. So apparently MTV had a show called Date My Mom.
Oh, yeah. That was a classic.
What?
Oh,
there were
God.
Multiple iterations of Date My Mom. I had some friends in college who had a bizarre obsession with it. There was Date My Mom. There's also Lesbian Date My Mom.
Oh, now I do remember this. It's not a dating show about, like, you know, dating a 45-year-old woman, because that would be gross. It's about an 18 to 24-year-old heterosexual male, gay male, or lesbian female goes on three separate dates with three moms who try to convince them to pick their son or daughter to date.
So you're not trying to bang the mom, you're trying to bang the kid.
But you don't. Yeah. It looks like you don't know what the kid looks like. You have to go based on the moms.
Mm.
Yeah.
Little Steven is wonderful. He's such a cute boy.
He liked to poop his pants a lot when he was a baby.
One time,
occasionally.
I had friends over at a dinner party, and he came out completely naked. It was so embarrassing. He was four years old.
Well, listen.
We let him suckle until he was 8 years old.
I still get flashbacks.
Well, this is, you know, it's what happens.
He's a wonderful boy. This is a sweet, sweet baby boy.
I like that you're giving my mom like a New Jersey coffee talk Yiddish
Jewish.
Accent.
Your mom sounds eerily like the characters from Oh Hello on Kroll Show, played by John Mulaney and Nick Kroll.
Yes, too much tuna.
I was thinking
it's my
of,
go-to mom voice, and I don't know why.
I was thinking of Linda Richman from Saturday Night Live.
Oh,
coffee talk. It's like butter.
Oh, God.
By the way, the Coffee Talk movie is probably not that far away. Mike Myers, he needs a paycheck. He needs to eat.
So, oh, he's not making any more movies ever again.
If you cut the check, he'll be in it. That's what I'm saying.
Since when?
Yeah.
The last movie he ever made was Love
Guru. Since Inglourious Bastards?
No.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. It's more that
he's been scarred for life. He's not making movies anymore.
Nobody's cutting the check anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is actually the last full-length film he has been in. Jesus Christ. Shrek Forever After.
Oh, that makes sense.
2010 and Inglourious Bastards 2009. Since then it's just documentary, and it looks like he directed something.
But Austin Powers 4 has been announced.
Oh, no.
Is it really? Well, I don't know. It depends who's running it. Could be good.
No.
Uh-oh. The only cast members confirmed. Mike Myers.
Writer and star, Mike Myers.
Seth Green.
He's available.
Yeah, well, Seth Green, you know, you don't even have to say paycheck. You just have to say paycheck, and he's there. So, all right, well, I think we got through the emails successfully. So, Todd Brisket, was there anything else you wanted to say before we packed up here?
Sure. You know, with the confusing story that this game had and the multitude of characters, it's interesting that we get to see and experience the game that influenced George Ronald Reagan Martin to write Game of Thrones.
Mm. Yeah, I think we made that point pretty clear during the show, that they're direct sequels to one another. Huel, how about you?
In a minute, you'll be hooked up to my machine, getting your pretty brains removed.
That's hot. DJ, thank you for being a guest. Did you have, by the way, I forgot to ask, is there anything you wanted to plug?
Plugs. Well, I will be presenting at the American Academy of Pediatric Neuropsychology Conference in Las Vegas, Nevada, in 2 weeks. If anyone was going to be there and wants to talk to me about pediatric neuropsychology, I know it's a passion of many of our listeners. Many of
you. Oh yeah, we are very big in the pediatric neuropsychology business.
I can't believe you saved this for the end. We should have been introing you as pediatric neuropsychologist DJ.
I forgot until you mentioned the thing about brains.
True. Glad I could remind you.
He lent his own brain out to a Dr. Edison for tonight's show. Well, DJ, was there anything you wanted to sign off with?
I just want to remind everyone that the meteor is in control and there will be no saved games.
Perfect. On that note, here's a snifferoo from next week's episode.